Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. Episode 8, Harford. Green masons flitted from stem to stem, tending the brightwood saplings with delicate claws and teeth to pull dead growth from new, spent petal from bud. Their tiny bodies barely bent the young branches, but Harford could still see the outer tips quiver with their quick footsteps, loose leaves twisting their way to the hard-packed earth like snowfall. There were dozens of them, squirrels mostly, alongside woodmouse and bank vole, making their way along the twisting lines spiralling out from the centre of the citadel, where the mighty blood oak stood, its trunk 300 steps wide and 1,000 in circumference. From where Harford lay, hidden among the serpentine roots wrapped around one of the citadel's many signing stones, she could see the bloodwood's limbs stretching out into the impossible distance, forking like lightning until they reached the citadel's ancient tree wall. The brightwood flowers were dull again now. Their glow faded to a creamy white in the early morning light, but a part of them still lingered in Harford's mind. The vision they had given her as they spread open, the waking dream they had imposed upon her, still made her tremble to think of it. She dared not sleep after. The young doe who had shown them to their dell after the ritual had been kind and gracious, with all the trappings one would expect of a king's daughter, despite only having been one for less than a year. Yet Harford dared not meet her gaze. It had been the doe who had been at the centre of the vision, or rather some hideous outline of her, a space where light seemed to fall into nothingness, as if the deer had been cut from existence. Something terrible stood behind that gap. Not the deer herself. Something terrible stood behind that gap. Not the deer herself, but something still far away, as if Harford were watching it creep closer at the end of a long, dark tunnel. The fox had returned to the citadel, hoping that being close to the flowers again would bring her some sense of peace from the chaos they had wrought upon her imagination. Maybe a second dose of their light would cure the effects of the first, as if returning to the place of a fool might calm one's fear of heights, but the flower's light was already gone by the time she arrived, as were the crowds that had thronged beneath the branches. The shadow of Cold Mountain meant there was no morning sun in Highwood, and Half-Light found herself shivering in the chill forest air. She had crawled in among the roots of the signing stone, uncertain if such closeness to the bloodwood's roots would calm or further ferment her troubled thoughts. Back in Applewood, the roots of the bloodwood tree had always brought her comfort. Her brother had often found her sleeping there, wound within their tangle. Something about their touch stilled her mind and gave scale to her problems. Things never felt as bad when she saw how far it spread. How many lives it cared for beneath the cracked and fissured boughs. The bloodwood tree of Applewood was ancient and prolific. Moss covered its branches like grass, and the air beneath it always smelled sweet with the scent of blood apples, which littered the forest floor as stones litter the eastern desert. It had seen generations rise and fall like tides. Her own tomats were like drops in the rain compared with the bloodwood's ocean of time. The longer she stayed among its roots, the calmer her own storms appeared. She had come to the Highwood Citadel hoping for the same thing. The blood oak of Highwood was not thought to be as old as Applewood, having only been planted after many of the other bloodwoods of the kingdom were already growing tall. The god Junos had taken a seed from every bloodwood and chewed them together, spitting one mighty acorn from his mouth onto the slopes of Cold Mountain, from which the blood oak would grow. From here the gods could see every bloodwood in the kingdom, to keep an eye on their citizens while they held council. Though there were god songs that said Junos had chosen the place so he could spy on the other bloodwoods, to see off their tricks before they could even be played. Harford had no idea if this was true. There had been many songs after the ritual the previous evening, the sounds and signs continuing long into the night, though she doubted any singers would have been so bold as to perform a song allowing any sense of mistrust to be inferred between the gods of the Bloodwoods. Last night had been a night of unity, a coming together of two mighty Bloodwoods as others had come together before them. The songs had echoed this, with dances such as the tale of Flightfoot or Puffheart's Folly reinforcing the sense that Applewood and Highwood were two Bloodwoods with a shared past and a common future. There was no mention of the delay her father had made in coming to receive his mark from the king, no doubts over why he had waited so long. The headmarked representatives of other Bloodwoods had watched the dances respectfully, though Harford was certain one or two would have preferred more emphasis on the kingdom as a whole, rather than just Highwood and Applewood. The two Bloodwoods were amongst the mightiest in the kingdom, and this night was a celebration of their coming together, but there were plenty of other lords who had made the journey to meet with the king and receive his mark. No doubt they all deserved their own dances, acknowledgement at least. Harford scratched at the edges of her own mark. It was not yet fully dry, even after a full night, and the gummy sap of the blood oak pulled uncomfortably at her fur. The irritation would fade in time, but for now there was nothing more she wished to do than rub it off against the rough bark of the bloodroot. She teased its edges, knowing she should be careful not to damage the mark itself. She wore two marks now, the mark of her father, and the mark of the three-horn above it. The rest of Applewood would not have to endure the discomfort of having two marks tugging at their hair on their heads. They would only continue to receive the mark of her father back in Applewood, as they'd always done. It was only the immediate family who had been invited to the trunk of the blood oak, where the stag stood, mouth dripping with sap from where he'd chewed away at the bark. The wound in the trunk needed to be deep enough for the sap to flow freely, thick and sticky, and the foxes had waited patiently while the king had struggled to find purchase on the gnarly surface. In Applewood, Harford's father had far less difficulty in drawing the Bloodwood's blessing from the tree, making quick work of the business every time. Maybe, given time, the new king would find it easier, or maybe the green seers would lead him to some spot where the bark was thinner, and the king's subjects would no longer have to hide their embarrassment as he scratched away at the bark with blunt teeth. Harford hadn't been blind to the significance of her double mark. The three-horn needed to be certain someone would return to Applewood bearing his mark upon their head, and her father was sold. He'd seen more summers than almost every other animal in Applewood, and the journey to Highwood had already exhausted him more than she had ever seen before. Even his step was weary, slow and sore, though he tried to hide it. The three-horn would have been a fool not to notice. The Applewood foxes had been given a glade where they could rest, not far from the citadel, with a delicate banner of willow woven over their heads to form a roof and a small stream that ran along one edge. Her father had collapsed into a corner as soon as their hosts had withdrawn. The Applewood Herbrites had nursed him there, binding his feet with poultices and giving him a draught of sugar water collected from the dell's many flowers. His bed had been moved to where he lay, to allow him better rest, though it had been long into the night before he'd been able to sleep. Harford had lay listening to his breathing crackle and rasp for as long as she could bear before the fear of sleep forced her from her bed to go and seek sanctuary among the roots of the blood oak. The quiet of the empty citadel had helped further soothe her mind, but now it was time to return to the dell. Her father would have woken by now, and, gods be willing, would be feeling far stronger now he'd been given some time to rest, knowing his family's alliances were all finally in place. Harford unfolded herself from the twists of the bloodroot and slid from their cover. Her emergence startled a nearby squirrel, who had evidently not seen her hiding place in the shadow of the signing stone. Harfoot gave it a brief sign of apology, but the thing remained frozen on the branch. Its eyes flicked down to her paws, noticing the angry welts that had risen where she had bitten them the night before. She was used to this sort of ugly attention. The sores on her feet often drew stares as she signed, and often distracted from her sign words, causing those she was signing to misunderstand or simply ignore what it was she was trying to say. The best tactic, she had found, was to start simple, and then wait while the shock of her broken paw subsided before continuing on to whatever it was she actually wanted to communicate. She waited for the squirrel to return some form of greeting appropriate to her station. Even here in Highwood, it would be expected to greet a headmarked animal of another bloodwood with the respect demanded by their station, and Harford waited patiently for it to regain control of itself and give the proper reply. But this squirrel made no move to respond. It turned its head a fraction, as if unsure what to do. A heartbeat later, and it seemed to decide, returning a sign of thanks before skittering down the trunk of the sapling and away towards the citadel's northward green gate, calling out for its colleagues to follow. There was a flurry of activity among the trees, and a dozen or so green masons deserted the brightwood saplings and exited the citadel, quiet and cautious. It seemed the green masons of Highwood would rather neglect their duties than risk insulting the daughter of Applewood by staring too long at her broken feet. They would return once she left, Harford reasoned, and the longer she stayed, the longer she would hold up their work. No doubt the blooming of the brightwood flowers last night took a great deal of effort. The same level of care would be needed now as the saplings recovered from their exertion. Even plants needed rest, she thought, as she set off, back towards the dell where her father and brother lay waiting. Even plants. So why in the name of the gods was she so afraid to sleep? Whiptail met her at the edge of the dell. The fox was a third cousin of Harford, who worked as a shoulder, overseeing many of her father's affairs. She carried herself cautiously, coming close to Harford before signing. "It's your brother," she signed. "He's very upset." "What happened?" asked Harford. "I do not know," signed Whiptail. "Your father called for him when he woke. They have been signing together in the shadow of the fallen oak branch. Please, your father is not well. Such passion is not good for him. The Herbrite said he needed nothing but rest. Please." "I understand," signed Harford, dismissing the shoulder. The fallen oak branch was easy to see. Judging by its size and colour, it would have been one of the blood oak's smaller branches, barely more than a twig on any normal-sized tree, but thick as the trunk of a 100-year-old oak. Harford found her father and brother tucked away in a gap in its higher branches, where the ground dipped, providing ample shelter from prying eyes. Applewood was now pledged to Highwood, but the wood was still full of eyes eager for intelligence on this new ally. Her father and brother both turned on her arrival. Breakcover was breathing hard, his tail low between his legs. Her father lay on the floor beside the fallen trunk, his cheeks sallow from poor sleep. The Herbrite's tinctures had clearly had little effect. "Daughter," signed Firebrow, "we were wondering when you would return. Where have you been?" Harford sent them both a picture of the citadel, its mighty tree wall patterned with softer colours in the daylight than the hard lines of night. "I'm glad you find comfort in the blood oak as you once did in the roots of the blood apple tree," sighed her father. "It was always the first place your brother would look for you when you went missing." Breakcover hung his head to hide himself from her gaze. There was a heat to him, she felt, despite the cold of the morning air. Something had angered him. She feared for what he might have signed in sight of their host's hindmark creatures. "It's peaceful there," signed Harford. "The crowds are gone. I think I disturbed the green masons a little." "Let us hope not too much," signed Firebrow. His words were gentle, without the power they once held. Each lift of the fox's paw seemed an effort that tensed his whole body. Breakcover grunted for attention. "Have you any further need of me, my lord?" he signed, using their father's formal title. Her father sighed. "I will not command you to stay, my son," he signed. "Go if you must, but leave your bitterness behind you. It serves us ill if we allow this to pull us apart." Brake cover hissed annoyance. "Very well, my lord," he signed, touching his mark. He made to leave, but stopped as he passed Harford. She waited for him to give her some sign, to snap or snarl his frustration, but he seemed uncertain what he wanted to say. He glanced back at their father, and then at her. He shook his head, and something inside him softened. "I want you to know I trust you," he signed deliberately. "More than anyone." She touched her mark in thanks, surprised by his generosity. With that, her brother trotted from the shelter, leaving her alone with her father. She crossed the space to him, and he rested his head against her shoulder. "Daughter," he signed, "I'm glad you came." "What's wrong with Breakcover?" she asked. "Nothing he cannot overcome," signed Firebrow. "He is young and proud, and sees insult where he should see honour. But he will come around." "It isn't like his new mark," signed Harford. Firebrow snorted amusement. "Not in the least," he signed. "Though he has stopped calling the king a traitor, for which I think we should both be grateful." "He still believes that Greypaw will return." "He clings to these rumours from the north," signed Firebrow. "The old king's ghost wandering the frozen forest, bringing a spectral army of ancestors along with him."
A memory of a dream came to Harford.
"A white bear on a field of battle." She pushed it away. "It scares you," signed Firebrow.
"Many things scare me," signed Harford.
Firebrow hummed gently. "You're brave to admit it," he signed. "Breakcover would not admit as much when I spoke to him. He fears the great bear's return. He believes we should have waited longer, until our scouts from the far north returned. He says we cannot stand against phantoms, that their victory would be assured."
"I think anyone would be a fool to stand against a ghost," signed Harford.
"Maybe," signed her father. "But it would be more foolish to align oneself with a rumour."
A cough racked his body. "That's new," thought Harford, "and worrying."
"Breaklight's dislike of our king is not what has upset him," signed Firebrow. "He is upset because of what I am about to command of you."
"Me?"
"Breakcover is a fine warrior," he signed. "But the alliance between Applewood and Highwood is green, like a new shoot. If Breakcover were to stay behind as the headmarked of Applewood, he would crush it before it had a chance to grow."
"Breakcover would sooner die than put his bloodwood in danger," signed Harford.
"Oh, I fully believe it," signed Firebrow. "He would not mean to, of course. But your brother is rash with his sign words. He has done well to control himself within Highwood's borders so far, but he would not be able to control his feelings for long. You know I am right."
"My brother is strong," she signed. "But he is uneasy so far from home. I think we all are."
"You are used to unease, wouldn't you agree?"
"It still hurts when they stare," she signed, holding out her raw paws. It was unlike her father to mock her like this.
"Applewood needs someone in Highwood who can control their sign words,"
Firebrow continued.
"Breakcover is my firstborn, and as such should be our headmarked emissary to the king."
"Of course," signed Harford. "He will learn to control his sign words."
"He will," her father replied. "But he will do it back home in Applewood."
Harford took a moment to understand his meaning.
"You have someone else in mind to represent our bloodwood to the king," she signed. "I do."
"Me?"
"Yes."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes." "And I could not persuade you to choose Whiptail instead? She knows the ways of Applewood better than I do." "I need Whiptail with me,"
he signed, raising himself stiffly. "They will not respect me," signed Harford. They will only see my lesser side. I will bring disgrace to our bloodwood."
Her father rested his head on hers. She felt him send a picture of the past, how she wandered the ways of Applewood with its elder creatures, the way she sought knowledge from the green masons and green seers alike, and learning from the Herberites. It was a picture saturated with pride, a father's image of his only daughter. Something within her broke as a stick breaks beneath the foot. Something deep. It was a good break. Her father stood back so she could see his sign words.
"You think the way you are makes you weak," he signed. "But you see things differently to how others see them. You always have. I do not pretend to understand it. You've always had to work harder, watch harder, to understand those around you, and that has made you strong."
"I'm not strong," she sighed.
"Oh, but you are," he sighed. "You are strong in a way I don't understand, a way your brother doesn't understand, though I believe he knows it to be true. I think maybe even you do not understand it, but it is true. They will have to invent new sign words for it."
"I don't want to be different," she sighed.
"Few do," he replied. "But it makes no difference to whether or not we are."
"Don't make me stay," she sighed. Fire broke off again, so hard he had to lie down. When his fit subsided, he looked up at her with sad eyes.
"I wish there were another way," he sighed. "But only the gods can choose their fate. The rest of us, well."
Harfoot sunk down next to him. "I'm not ready," she sighed. Firebrow gave a low hum of comfort.
"If you felt you were ready," he sighed, "it would already be too late."
He lay his head between his paws and rested. A moment later, and he was asleep. Harfoot lay there with him, feeling his slow, steady breath against her side. Beyond the little shelter, the rest of the dell was almost ready for the day ahead, the tours and meetings that would consolidate this new Bloodwood relationship. Her brother and her would represent her father until he was well enough again to travel home. And then he would set out again, across the Greatlands, with their great host, returning home with her brother to rule Applewood in the king's name rather than his own. It was an honor of sorts, though she knew her brother would prefer Applewood to stand alone until the Great Bear returned. She wondered if any of the rumors could be true. Could Greypaw's ghost really have returned to the kingdom? If he had, would he march on Highwood to reclaim it as his own? And if he did, what would he make of her? A high-marked creature of Applewood with a stag's print upon her head. She'd be an enemy to him. And she would have to stand alongside the three-horned stag to face off an army of ghosts. The fantasy scared her almost as much as the truth. Because the truth was that the Great Bear was dead. There was no coming back from the Forest of the Gods. Not anymore, not for 100 generations. The truth was the three-horned stag was king, and she carried his mark. Her father would go home, taking her brother with him, and she would be left here, in Highwood, to live a half-life, never fully home, forever an outsider. She knew she should take it as an honor. She knew the responsibility her father was placing upon her, the trust it meant he had in her, but still, to live this far from home, it was an honor and a curse, and she already had her fair share of curses. She lay her head down next to her father's. If she stayed, it would be many moons before she saw him again. She breathed in his scent, remembering how he used to play with her as a cub by Briartooth Stream.
He'd been so much stronger then. She closed her eyes and let the sounds of the bloodwood fade around her until all that was left was her own heart beating in time with his, their breath steady, breathing the same air. She owed him so much, she realized. A lifetime of support, despite everything she had done not to deserve it. All the shame she had already wrought upon their family. All the worry she had caused them. The embarrassment she had been, with her gnawed feet and her freakish waking dreams. After it all, she thought, his sleep finally covered her like deep snow. Despite everything I am, he still chose me. You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. To learn more, visit olliefrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, may the gods always hear your song.